Welcome to Insta Poetic Justice, the first podcast of its kind discussing the ever-evolving terrain of poetry and technology and how these two have merged together to create the subgenre that is Insta Poetry. Here I will interview poets about poets as we weigh in on the positives and negatives of this new literary phenomenon. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer. You can check out my poetry books at www.paganpoetess.com. Supporting me via my published works is the best way to ensure all these podcasts remain free and accessible to everyone. And now, on with the show. Welcome, poetry lovers. This is the first ever episode of Insta Poetic Justice. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer, and today I am joined by the fabulous poet, Caitlin Schaefer of San Francisco. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi.
Some of you may know Caitlin on Instagram as Amori Poetry. Her info will be in the description box of this episode, including the link to her poetry collection, The Love of Being Alive. It's available on Amazon. Get your copy today. I just bought mine 3 days ago. So the way each episode is going to work is that we will start with an interview of the guest speaker, asking them questions about their poetry, their writing process, as well as the reciting of some of their own poems. Secondly, we will move on to discuss the designated Insta poet of the episode, in this case, Robert M. Drake. This section will consist of three parts: a brief intro of the Insta poet's background, the recitation and analysis of a variety of their poems, and finally, a reading of an article/review criticizing that poet and a discussion whether we agree or disagree with that critique. And thirdly, we will wrap up the episode with an exercise I am calling #InstaPoetry, where the guest speaker and I will search in real time to the most recent Instagram posts with the #InstaPoetry and recite those poems and discuss whether we like them or not. So, are you ready, Caitlin?
I'm ready.
Alrighty then. Well, I think we should first mention to our listeners is that I found you through a poetry anthology that I purchased called Insta Poet that was published by Augie's Bookshelf.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me just a little bit about that experience of participating with that anthology?
Yeah, it was pretty simple to get involved with. They were holding submissions via Instagram, so I just tagged them and I submitted to the hashtag and they reached out and it kind of went from there. It was a pretty cool project. There's a lot of other talented poets featured in it. And it was a really great experience.
Right, wonderful. And I just wanted to read my favorite poem from that little anthology, Insta Poet, that you wrote. I want to sit on the edge of the ocean and let the sand run through my fingers. I want my breath to catch the winds of waves so I can exhale the belief that I am lacking as they console me and encourage me to aim higher. Yeah, so basically in Insta Poet, each poet contributes like 2 to 3 poems, and that was my favorite of yours that you contributed.
Awesome, thank you.
So did you specifically submit those poems to the anthology, or did they choose you as a poet and then you gave them whatever?
Yeah, they chose me as a poet, and then I believe they had me send in a few of my favorite, and then they kind of selected from there.
Definitely participating in the anthology is what got you here on this podcast, because this is how I found out about you.
Cool.
So what inspired you to start writing poetry? And more specifically, to start posting on Instagram?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I've always been someone that's lived kind of quiet and privately. I've never been someone who has been very outspoken. I always kept my feelings to myself. It was always hard for me to express my emotions to other people. But I found writing helped me release that. Mm-hmm. And I always kept my writing hidden. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, what good is it to just keep it hidden in a notebook? I wanted to start to share it with others who maybe as well felt like they couldn't express themselves verbally to other people. So that's when mm-hmm. I started to just take the leap and try posting on Instagram and see where it led.
Was there any specific choice between Instagram or possibly sharing on other social media platforms?
I think for me, I chose Instagram because I was seeing a lot of other poets on there. And I'm like, well, I guess that's how I started viewing other people's poetry was through Instagram, and I was like, oh, okay, like their accounts look pretty cool. So yeah, that was just kind of accessible and easy to share and view things, I guess.
Okay, wonderful. I just asked the question because there is this whole, again, there's this whole debate about the term Insta-poetry and Insta-poet, and I just, you know, one thing right. I want to ask, you know, the poet is, you know, was that really a very conscious choice that certain poets made to post on Instagram to say they decided I'm going to specifically be an sure. Insta poet, whereas I tend to approach it more in the sense that, you know, all poets are just poets and just Instagram in our very modern technological world, that just seems like a very natural progression that you mm-hmm. want, if you want to show your work, you show it on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a platform that has millions and millions of users, so why not try to get your work viewed on there?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so another question I have is, why did you decide to write under the name Amori Poetry?
Yeah, so going back to where I said I was always kind of like a private person and afraid to show my feelings, it was kind of similar. It was a way for me to express myself to others openly, but also anonymously, because I felt in the beginning, especially where I didn't have my real name, Caitlin, on there, mm-hmm. it was easier for me to, I guess, write more freely, because if my name was out there, I would feel like maybe I wouldn't mm-hmm. write exactly what I was feeling, or I would try to like limit it somehow. So it was just a way for me to just to write freely.
So to follow up on that question, was there any specific significance to you personally about the title Amori Poetry? Like, how did you specifically come to that name?
I wasn't sure what I wanted to write under. I thought about just doing like my initials or some other sort of name. But then I decided, I was going through different words and like trying to attach like the suffix IE to it to see what it would sound like. And yeah, I did found the word amor, which means, which is a word for like love. Mm-hmm. And I attached the suffix IE. So mm-hmm. like amori, which is like having to do with love, which as a writer, I want all my poems to stem from like some sort of feeling of love. And so, yeah, that was pretty much it. It wasn't okay. too thought out, but there was some thought to it, I guess.
Okay. So how long did it take for you to write your poetry collection, The Love of Being Alive?
I took a few pieces that I had already written and some going back to like high school, just some poems that I just had buried away like in a notebook or a journal. So I took a few from there, but the collection itself, finishing, putting everything together and having it sent to the publisher and her editing it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, it was probably like 8 months or so in total.
Mm-hmm. And how did that process just differ from, you know, this was your own poetry collection, not just a few of your pieces within the Insta-Poet anthology. So how did that process differ?
Well, with the collection, it's entirely mine, whereas, of course, the anthology, mm-hmm. there's an entirety of talented poets. I wanted something that was just mine that I could put together, and it was like a gift, I guess.
Yeah, and call your own?
Yeah, exactly. I wanted a home for my poems, a proper home.
Of course. Do you think you'll write any more collections in the future?
Yes, definitely. I have been working on one right now. I'm hoping to have that one finished by the end of the year. And then, mm-hmm. of course, publishing will that'll add some time. So mm-hmm. hopefully by early next year, mm-hmm. hopefully that'll be available.
Okay, wonderful. So one thing I'm curious about, for you personally, does writing energize or exhaust you?
Oh, I've definitely felt both instances, I guess, depending on the topic I'm writing about. Like if it's something mm-hmm. that has, like if it's related to an event that has like emotionally drained me, I guess that can bring back like feelings of exhaustion. But mm-hmm. I guess it's also freeing on both ends.
Yeah, I don't know. For me personally, like when I write prose, like that sometimes can be exhausting, just the meticulousness of dialogue and stuff. But I just find for myself personally that when I write poetry and I finish writing a poem, like I get a super high. It's like a drug.
Yeah, I've definitely felt that before.
Of course. So one question very relevant to today's times, has the COVID-19 pandemic and or the anti-racism protests affected your writing or your writing process this year?
It definitely has. I'm not sure how it's affected other poets, but for me, it kind of has slowed me down. And I know it's like I have, because of COVID and I have so much extra time on my hands to be writing, but it just, I don't know. I've been blocked. And of course, everything else going on with the movements, I just wanted to step back and not make myself like the center of attention, I guess, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, that makes sense. And again, for me personally, both the pandemic and the protests have completely reshaped my current poetry collection that I hopefully will publish by the end of the year. It originally, the wider broad theme of the collection was going to be disillusionment. And now, because of everything that's happening, I decided to add two more sections. So there's going to be three sections to collection where one part is disillusionment. Yeah. The other part is disease, all the poems I've written in response to COVID-19. And then the third section will be dismantled, talking about all the anti-racism protests and the racial tensions within the United States. Because, well, I myself am white and cannot claim to fully understand or empathize with the African-American community, but I am a part of an interracial relationship and just, you know, living side by side with my husband and seeing what he goes through and, you know, having it in your face, like constantly how the world treats us in different ways. So yeah, that definitely had an impact.
Yeah, definitely. You had a more of an inspirational, you were spurred to write more and I was kind of disinclined to write. I don't know. Different opposite ends.
Yeah. But that's again, cool. Neither end is right or wrong. It's just
The
disposition of the poet.
Absolutely.
Have you ever read anything that made you think differently about poetry?
Oh, goodness. I feel like there's been a lot of instances where I'll read something and I'm like, wow, that definitely, maybe not necessarily changed how I think, but definitely maybe more attentive to it, I guess I would say, or see someone's viewpoint differently, especially if it's not something that I've been through specifically. But yeah, it definitely has the power to do that.
Yeah, because I just asked the question in relation to, because, you know, a lot of people come down really hard on Insta poetry just by the nature of they do not want to call it poetry in any way, shape, or form. And so, you know, just thinking about, like, I tend to be more of a person where it's, if you want to argue that it's bad poetry, fine, but no one can put themselves in this, you know, pedestal and be able to say that I can define poetry.
Yeah. Definitely. I would agree.
So what was the hardest poem that you have written to date? Which one was the most challenging for you?
I feel like any poem that I have to write that has anything to do with like self-worth or finding yourself has always been kind of hard for me to write because I have struggled with self-esteem and everything like that. And it took me so long to find my value as a person. So any poem that I write that kind of recognizes my value, I feel like it's always hard for me to write just because I've always, like I said, I've struggled with that, but
Alrighty then. Wonderful. Thank you so much. One more question before we move on to the recitation of your poems. If you had to do something differently as a child or teenager to become a better writer as an adult, what would you do?
I think I probably would have let more people view them just to get more critique, especially like maybe teachers or other people who knew me on a deeper level, just to get some sort of critique or like what I could do better or, you know, just things like that. I would have just, let more people see them sooner.
You felt like you stowed them away for too long?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you. And then would you mind reading us a couple of your poems?
Sure.
please state the name of the poem and then if it comes from a book or an upcoming book or whichever.
Sure. So the three that I have, they're all from my debut collection, The Love of Being Alive. Mm-hmm. And most of the poems are untitled in there. So
okay.
Yeah, these three don't have a title.
Okay, but, then.
The first one here. I am so incredibly greedy. Not in the way you might think. I have hunger and desire for getting everything out of life. I won't apologize for my ambition. I won't apologize for my free spirit. I will always want more. There will always be something else to achieve. I won't settle. There are too many things in life for me. That's yeah, the first one.
Yes, I know. I remember reading that one, you know, when I bought your book. I really like poems that deal with like greed and avarice, and whether it's very directly greed as in like money or greed in a more metaphorical sense.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Okay, so the next one. This one's a little short and sweet, but it's one of my favorites that I've written. And here it is. Can the ocean hold me? I feel I need its calm. Can the ocean keep me? I can be rough too.
Yes, I remember that one too. Just the notion of the ocean can be tumultuous or it can be tranquil, and the same with emotions. They ebb and flow.
Yep, absolutely. All right, and the next one. This one was inspired by just hanging out with a friend. We were outside at a campfire and we were looking at the sky and we were just totally in awe of everything in life. And we're just, yeah. I asked the stars to speak to me, to give me a reason why, to offer me anything, or tell me why they hunt in the sky. But they didn't have much to say. All they do is shine. And here we are in wonderment, always asking why.
Oh, that one's so cute. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and especially holds true for me because I didn't stargaze too much as a kid, but like though a few times I took the time to do it, I felt like it was really special to me. So yeah, I can totally mm-hmm. get that. That's the sentiment surrounding that poem.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing those with us. And
absolutely.
And now we can move on to our discussion of Robert M. Drake. And as you know, I emailed all the guest speaker poets and, you know, asked them, you know, give me their top three choices of which poets they would want to discuss. And your top choice was R.M. Drake. So why specifically did you want to discuss him?
Yeah, I feel like he's someone that I've seen from the beginning of my poetry journey. Just starting out, he was one of the poets on Instagram that I followed and read and just felt like kind of a connection to a lot mm-hmm. of his pieces. And he's definitely grown massively and he's very talented, but mm-hmm. one that I seen when I was just starting my journey. So
yeah. How many do you remember how many followers he had when you first started following him?
Oh goodness.
I'm just curious, just trying to get a time frame, because I don't even remember how many he has now. It's like, you know, 1 or 2 million.
Yeah, it's like 2 million now. And I want to say, I don't even think he had anywhere close to 1 million when I first started following him. It was still a good amount, but it wasn't anywhere near now what it is.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up a sort of like Wikipedia article on him. Robert M. Drake is a pen name. And so his real name is actually Robert Macias. Yeah. And he was born and raised in Miami, Florida, the youngest of three children of Colombian immigrants. His father was a maintenance man at Jackson Memorial Hospital, and his mother worked in a factory. We were very poor, he recalls. I remember in elementary school, there was always a book fair every year. I see all the other kids getting books. My parents couldn't afford it. His parents were too poor to afford cable television. Oh, that makes me so sad. Can't even get a book at a book fair? He joined Instagram in November 2012 and began posting his poetry there the following October. He would type each poem using an antique 1940s Royals typewriter on handmade paper and photograph and upload the image. And that's interesting because I feel like a lot of poets have, I don't know if he was the original one to do that, but certainly that is a style of the visuality of Insta poetry that has been replicated a lot.
Definitely.
Yeah, ultimately as an artist, that's one of the goals, he says. You want people to see and critique it. I put my work out there to the point where it'll be very hard to ignore who I am. By 2014, his Instagram account had grown to 40,000 followers. And then, you know, because of people like the Kardashians and others, like his numbers just shot up and they've just been going higher and higher ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's basically his background. So would you like to read one of the poems you picked out from him?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So a lot of things I noticed on Instagram, a lot of his poems don't have titles either. They're just kind of, they just kind of start. Here's the first one. That's the thing. You don't know. You don't know what the future holds, but you can be optimistic about it. After all, you are light. You are magic. A cluster of stars, full of water, full of flowers and life.
That's cute. Is that, does that hail from any specific collection of his or just his feed, or where'd you get that poem?
It is on his feed, but I also believe it's a piece from one of his newer collections, Something Broken, mm-hmm. Something Beautiful.
Oh, okay. So yeah, all the poems that I chose for him, you know, I actually bought the book that he wrote with R.H. Singh, like Falling Towards the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I bought a lot of their books for like research for the podcast, and so yeah, most of mine hail from this one. And this is his most, at least his most recent collaboration with R.H. Singh. I don't know if it's his most recent collection or not.
Okay.
So this one on page 13 of Falling Towards the Moon is, he titles it Still Here. You're still here in this goddamn forsaken city, and you're still walking, breathing and living, no matter how much it hurts inside. You're still you. You're still fighting, trying to maintain, waking up each day and telling yourself it's okay, because it is. You're still recovering. You're still realizing your worth, no matter how many times you've been let down. You're still here, goddammit, young and beautiful, full of pain, full of laughter, cold and broken, but never alone. The struggle is real. You are real, what you feel is real, and you must realize your strength and how you are capable of moving on. You must realize the beauty of finding yourself and your natural ability to heal. You must realize how special you are, and how you value yourself is the most important thing in the world. Always.
Aw, love that.
Yeah, no, I that poem particularly resonated with me because in my earlier years, like late teenage, early 20s, you know, I struggled a little bit with depression. And so just I can definitely, you know, resonate with those feelings of, you know, just trying to get through the day and just be, you know, and just when you're young, all those emotions are super amped up and amplified.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think we'll alternate going back and forth between reading a poem. So would you like to read another one?
Yeah. All right. This one is also from on his Instagram feed. A good woman is a rare thing. They teach you about life, about love, about patience. They give you the kind of lessons that'll last a lifetime.
I don't know how I feel about that one. Just because I'm going through a bit of a feminist kick where I don't like the notion of a good woman being a rarity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so when
you definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah,
there.
No, it's, well, I, more specifically, I'm on this kick of I hate the you're not like other girls, and it's, and I hate how it like pits women like against each other, you know, trying to say that, you know, traditional femininity is bad and all of those things. So I'm just like, you know.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I guess I didn't read it that way, but now it definitely makes sense. Like,
yeah, no, and I totally don't think that that was his intention, you
right?
Know, because, you know, it's not that there aren't a lot of like good women. It's just, you know, like in a relationship, specifically good for someone else,
right? Yeah.
So here's another poem from him. A message on Facebook. I get a DM. One girl tells me I am God, that I always know what she feels, that my words always come to her at the right moment. Soon after, I get another DM. Another girl tells me my work is trash, and that's all she writes in the message. I don't know what it is, what I do, why I write, why I even read their messages. People are funny, confused little creatures. They either love or hate what they don't understand.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I chose that poem because it struck me, because again, this notion of this huge dichotomy of people's feelings towards Insta poetry and mm-hmm. how, you know, it resonates with a lot of people. But for some people, just that simple right. emotional response isn't really enough for them. Like, they expect something sure. more, which for me personally, I'm thinking, like, what more are you expecting? Isn't that the point of poetry, is to mm-hmm. elicit an emotional response? But yeah.
Right. And I guess based on that, just saying it's trash, but not giving a specific reason, like, why you feel that way, or maybe you think yeah. poetry should be one thing or another, but don't just say it's trash, you know, at least give them something more
substantial than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least yep. if you just back up what you're saying, be like, okay, if this is trash to you, can you tell me why? Like, you didn't like the structure, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people approach Insta poetry in the same way they approach Twilight.
Mm-hmm. They just want to hate on something.
What?
They just want to hate.
They just want to hate on something. But also, I'm seeing a trend of, not obviously Drake is a man, but a lot of Insta poets are women, and a lot of the poetry sure. that both male and female poets write are consumed by, you know, young teenage girls. And just as yeah. a society, we constantly are trying to diminish what younger women value.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really interesting part of Insta poetry that I feel partially delegitimizes some of its criticisms, because mm-hmm. a lot of it just wants to be like, oh, okay, they're not sophisticated, these young girls that they're writing to, so of course they're not going to critique it. But, and again, with some other poets, they have Ruby Kaur and others who talk about really serious issues that impact a lot of women, and even especially women of color, and just trying to delegitimize that space of Insta poetry where they can share all that stuff, I feel is a little disheartening.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Would you like to share another poem?
Yes. I am not depressed. I'm not broken or empty. I'm exhausted emotionally, spiritually, physically. I just need someone to hold me, someone real. Someone who knows what it's like to have a deep heart. There's another one that's short and sweet.
Yeah, and why do you like it so much?
I think the last line of it kind of spoke to me, like someone who knows what it's like to have a deep heart. Like mm-hmm. I always felt that maybe others didn't understand me just because I felt so much, but I also didn't know how to express it. So how can someone possibly know like my heart if I don't express it, I guess.
All right, so another poem from Falling Towards the Moon is called Important Choices. There comes a time where you must make a choice, and I don't mean one of those silly little choices between what shoe to wear or what pants to put on. I mean the kind of choice that is going to change your life forever, because bad things are going to happen, and some good things too. But it is how you let them affect you. That within itself is the most important choice of all. So I really liked that poem because it emphasizes the point of something I feel is very important in life is, I don't know whether it's tied into our notions of destiny or predetermination, but just the idea that putting this huge dichotomy between one choice or the other. And I tend to prefer a philosophy more like you make the right choice or you make the choice right.
Okay.
That like one has the ability to kind of, even if there are two different choices, like one isn't like all good and the other isn't all bad or anything, you know, like that how we approach the decision is how we get the most out of it.
Yeah. Whatever choice, I guess you decide, you'll learn from it in one way or another. So.
Alrighty. Would you like to go on to your next poem?
Yep. Sometimes, no matter what happens, we stay. No matter how bad it hurts, we stay. Some people just speak to us in ways we never imagined, in ways we'll never understand. You quite don't know how to let them go, how to move on. You stay, even if everything is telling you to leave. And that one, I feel like a lot of people can relate to it, even if like you're not going through the relationship. But if you're, for me, like I've been in a similar situation where I'm like I wait around for someone who's just not good for me. And all my friends, they're like, why do you like him?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one understands it but me. Like, I don't need mm-hmm. to validate. I know I like him. But even though they are bad for you. So mm-hmm. I get that on my end, but also on the other side, like as the friend who sees the bad relationship, mm-hmm. like I may not understand why they're staying, but I guess, yeah, they have a relationship that I don't understand. So,
mm-hmm. I think you're right. A lot of people can relate to that sort of situation, whether it's a romantic relationship or whether it's any sort of interpersonal relationship, mm-hmm. a dysfunctional family member or a toxic friend. Like, we all get to that point. And part of it is we see the severing of a toxic person as like a sort of like super a super offensive move.
Yeah.
That is so extreme, and like people view it in a sort of punitive way, mm-hmm. rather than just, no, I'm taking care of my sanity by just not putting myself around toxic people.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, again, there are a lot of people, especially when it's family members, you want to cut them off, and everyone wants to say, oh no, you can't do that. And so there's all the societal pressure to maintain the interpersonal connection, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. And also the line in there, some people just speak to us in ways we never imagined, in ways we'll never understand. Like, that makes sense to me, because you can know someone's bad for you, but just some of the conversations you might have with them, you could be just so enamored by like how they think, and
mm-hmm.
you know, even though you know it's not a good, like you said, it could be toxic, but
it can either stem from fear of being alone, or it could stem from just a type of addiction, like, not to go super psychoanalysis on the podcast, sure. but just the notion of like, there are some like pickup artists who literally use manipulative behavior to treat people badly just so that the person will try to get the person's good approval, because thinking that, oh, they're so hard to please, therefore they're a person of substance, like in some weird way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like, just that also what it makes me think of in terms of why do we stay with bad people? Because like, it's set up like sometimes subconsciously and sometimes very intentionally and consciously on the part of the toxic person, that, you know, they're trying to create this sort of challenge or competition,
mm-hmm.
you know, to win their approval. My next poem is called Fight Wars. We fight their wars. We come home and they give us a statue. We die for what they believe in. We come home and they give us a medal. They praise us for our bravery, for how we fought each night. And then we come back home. They take away our business. They take away our culture. They take away our pride and legacy. And then they wonder why none of us truly succeed. Not unless we work for them. Not unless we join their revolution. One built on blood, sweat, tears, and sacrifices. We fight their wars, my love, my people. Because if we do not, we are thrown to the wolves, in jails to rot. And then some of us don't even make it back home. No, instead, we come back in a box full of medals. And maybe if we are lucky, we get a statue with our name. Yeah, that's a pretty hefty one. And
yeah,
definitely for anyone who wants to criticize that Insta poetry has no substance, like you can critique style or whatever. And, you know, but like that one, I wouldn't even know how to begin to analyze it, because clearly R.M. Drake is making some allusions to maybe how we treat veterans once they come home.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it seems, you know, a lot of veterans have, you know, a rough time. You know, sometimes they have PTSD and they can't fully reintegrate in society, and society gives them no assistance whatsoever to help them in that reintegration. And so they're just left on the margins. Yeah, because I know that is a problem. But again, I have not studied it in any serious fashion. Have you come across these issues or know anything more about them?
Not personally, but I definitely, we know it's a problem. Like, veterans not getting the assistance they need. Or even here in California, I see so many homeless people with signs saying that they're homeless, they're a veteran, they're homeless, and they can't find any assistance anywhere. So it's definitely a problem for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the lines that particularly struck out to me was, and then they wonder why none of us truly succeed, not unless we work for them, not unless we join their revolution. So I don't know, what do you think he's trying to say by that?
By a few of the lines in the piece, like, I get the veteran side of it, but it also, I'm also getting like a little bit of maybe like immigrant experiences, I guess, from that. Like people who are American, but of a different culture, religion, you know, what have you. And they're still viewed as not, I guess, a part of what we've deemed, you know, the right society or, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, you're right. And definitely would make sense given the background of Robert M. Drake we just read about. I guess I'm just really intrigued by the not unless we join their revolution. And to me, I feel that has a very political charge just right now because everything is so divisive between the right and the left. So just the idea that you're not going to get anywhere unless you like pick a side and like are die hard. I will defend this side, be it left or right, until my dying breath. And so, and if you don't, then you're people think you're a coward
or something.
Yeah, because just revolution in the context of our current political climate, that's what struck me the most about this poem.
Absolutely.
So would you like to move on to your next one?
Yep. All right. Let it be known that love is not love, not unless it is felt in your bones. Let it be known that a relationship is not a relationship, not unless the two of you are on the same page. Never give someone your deepest love, not unless they are willing to give you theirs. And never trust anyone by their word. Let their actions speak for themselves. Let what they do soften your heart. And let how much they care be the kind of light that warms the soul.
That's an interesting one. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
One that a lot of people can relate to, with one person liking the other more so than vice versa.
Definitely.
I think one thing that's interesting, though, that it made me think of just in the age-old cliche is actions speak louder than words.
Yep.
But in a lot of times in relationships, one person will act in a way that's, you know, and then people make certain assumptions based on how like ardently or how passionately they're acting. And then when those assumptions are made and those assumptions are brought up, the person will backtrack. It's like, well, I never said that.
Right.
I never said that was serious. So, yeah, like I understand what he's trying to say. Like, you know, of course, actions speak louder than words. But I feel like specifically in romantic relationships, like also things have to be clearly defined verbally. Otherwise, people will backtrack regardless of how they acted.
Yep, absolutely.
And well, then, that's the
the line, let it be known that a relationship is not a relationship, not unless the two of you are on the same page. Like for me, you know, that resonated because I'm always, more often than not, I found myself on receiving end. Like I would have the feelings and the other wouldn't, they wouldn't be as strong, or even though there was no relationship defined, I would still hinder myself when it came to like other potential people because like, oh no, I have feelings for this person. We're kind of seeing each other, so I'm not going to pursue anything else just out of respect. But I'm like, that's not a relationship, like, because that other person is probably out there pursuing other options as well. So why am I acting like it's not a relationship unless we're both on the same page? So why am I treating it as such?
Yeah, no, I've definitely been there too.
It's
tough. And again, we think we've all been there. And this is why the Insta Poets are so popular.
Exactly.
The last poem that I picked out from Robert M. Drake is, it's called Let It. You can't stop love. You can't beat it either, but it can beat the oxygen out of your body. And it is strong enough to kill you, to destroy an entire building without the use of bombs. You can't stop love. That is never going to happen. The same way you can't stop death or birth, or laughter, or pain, or all the things that rush towards your life, for better or for worse. You can't stop love, so let it happen. Let it give you all the stupid little reasons to do it, to find it. You can't stop love. You can't stop anything from happening. So let it all consume you.
Oh, that one's good.
I like it because what we talked about earlier is like sometimes we delegitimize the intensity of the feelings of young people and of youth. And we just think of young people as stupid and immature and, you know, not giving credence to anything that they say or feel. And so I thought that poem was nice in showing how, you know, again, just how intense those feelings can be, especially when you're feeling them for the first time as a young person. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're shallow or whatever.
Right. Life is too short to just try to spend your time like diminishing someone else. Like, yeah, just feel what you need to feel. And
Did you have any other poems from him?
Nope, those are the ones that I had selected.
Okay, yeah, because I just finished up mine. So now we can move on to analyzing, you know, again, a critique of Armdrake and whether, you know, our own personal comments on that. Mm-hmm. This article is from Miami New Times, and it was written in 2015. It talks about Instapoets in general, not just Drake, but, you know, it does mention a criticism that he's received, so... Drake regularly stencils his writings on sidewalks and walls around Vinewood. He has also published the book Beautiful Chaos, currently the number 4 bestseller among poetry titles on Amazon, beating out Edgar Allan Poe, Walt Whitman, and Allen Ginsberg. Poe, Whitman, and Ginsberg get better reviews from the critics, though. Drake's poems seem like those of a very young and immature fellow who is trying to think hard about life, quips Chaucy Mabe, former book critic of the Sun Sentinel and a certified member of the local literati. It's Hallmark card level, only really, really depressed Hallmark cards.
Oof.
Also, so that was from a news article, and then I also just happened to look at the reviews on Amazon for this specific book of his that I bought, Falling Towards the Moon. And here's one star review that I saw.
Okay.
Masturbatory treacle masquerading as insightful poetry. If the author was any more self-absorbed, he'd disappear up his own arse. Reeks of an adolescent boy trying too hard. Yes. So what do you think of those two statements?
On the first one where, you know, they're talking about Edgar Allan Poe and Walt Whitman and poets like that. Those poets, they're classic, and they're obviously their writings are transcendent, but also like those writers are from how long ago? Like this is a new generation of writers. So I don't know, to kind of compare it to something so much older and dated,
mm-hmm.
It's hard because there's a new way of writing. Like people now, especially with Insta poetry, they like that they can read something quick
mm-hmm.
and move on. Like they don't, I guess now time goes by so fast, they don't have time to sit there and analyze an entire poem. I don't know.
unless you're me who's analyzing Edgar Allan Poe on my Gothic Literature podcast.
Yeah, yes. There you go.
Yeah, but no, I totally get what you mean. And, you know, for myself personally, my BA degree was in linguistic studies, so I understand mm-hmm. very well that language changes and language evolves. And I think you're absolutely right that it's a bit unfair to hold modern poets to a very archaic standard and style of the English language.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think there's a snobbery, not just about the past versus the present, which of course, you know, I think writers and book lovers, I think we all to a certain degree love to romanticize the past. I'm certainly guilty of that as well. I'm an avid consumer of historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But not just the past and the present. I think it also has to do with the role of technology, not just that it's modern, but that Insta poetry and its intrinsic relationship with social media and how that somehow diminishes the merit of the poetry, because we just for whatever reason, again, we romanticize the page, we romanticize the physical book. I'm the same way to a certain extent. I prefer to have my own books, but I also realize I can't physically keep all the books that I want to read. So I have to make certain choices between Kindle and the paperback. But I think it's a little unfair that, you know, we dismiss Insta poetry purely based on the fact that it is very much connected to technology and that just by the nature of being connected to social media, that diminishes its value.
For sure.
Yeah. What do you think of specifically the notion, because both these totally different, but they both said basically the same thing about a little boy trying too hard.
I don't know. Like, I feel like that's kind of harsh. Yeah. I don't know.
I think so too, especially because, again, like the Fight Wars one, like these are talking about, even if you totally want to dismiss the certain poems about love and relationships and all the things teenagers go through. But even putting that aside, like the Fight Wars poem, like talking about really serious sociopolitical issues, you know, I don't think that's trying too hard. I think that's a legitimate expression of, you know, what's going on in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, then the only thing I would say, like my personally, my own, like I hadn't read any of his works beforehand. The only thing I might say about Robert N. Drake that's possibly negative is, again, his writing is very, I wouldn't say simplistic. Like I tend to be the type that if a poet is going to go total like free verse, then I want it to be, I need a certain level of like flowery language and metaphor.
Sure.
Which R.M. Drake doesn't always have in his poems, so I can get why people sometimes view it as simplistic. But again, if he can compensate with the fact that it's so simplistic with something that's really deep and, again, evokes the emotional response, then I think it balances out, which I think he does in a lot of his poems.
Sure, definitely. That makes sense.
So is there anything more you would like to say on Robert M. Drake?
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I think we covered it pretty well and had good conversation about, you know, his poems and what they represent and what they symbolize. So Now we can move on to our closing exercise, hashtag poetry. Do you have your phone handy?
I do.
Yeah, so if you could just go to Instagram. I'm going to Instagram too, and I'm just typing in Insta poetry.
Gotcha.
And I'm not specifically doing like the top ones. I'm specifically doing like the most recent ones. So just seeing like anybody.
Got it.
Yeah. So I found one, poems by Ingvild, I guess. Why do we cling to those who don't want us? Is it because a broken heart hurts less after all than a heart that has no one to love? So that's kind of a cute one. Again, yeah. What we were talking about in some of the other poems is why do we stay with someone who is bad for us?
Yeah, for sure.
Did you find one?
Okay, here's one. By Felicity Stinson. We said goodbye, not with our words, yet with our words. We are worlds apart.
Is that it?
Yep. They're not on the same page, maybe. Like, they didn't say goodbye with their words, but, like, they're from different worlds, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't make me feel that much here. Oh, there's one with the Black Power Fist. So what's this one? This was by the poet 330 from Blythe, California. Seems to be called Deception. All has been designed, misdirection and trickery. They will all lose their mind, turning as bitter as Kikori. Square up. Incompetent individuals try killing the smallest pup, watching little girls cry. Polly want a cracker? Speak in soliloquy. Calamity ensues the tracker, leading only to bigotry, protesting our rights. On guard to the man, mount up knights. Time for the master plan. Stand tall to a system of control. Rise up, we march while the bells toll.
Interesting.
Definitely in vibe with the Black Lives Matter movement.
Definitely.
Yeah. The one thing that is hard with this exercise is a lot of the hashtags of Insta poetry are not written in English, so I cannot enjoy them.
Right. Yeah, I'm noticing that too.
Oh, here's one that came from that I just updated the hashtag again. And it's from Narcissist Sociopath Awareness. And it says, know the difference between being somebody's home and somebody's hostage. Monsters look like angels for a reason. From Aaron Van Vuren.
Wow, yeah, I definitely can understand that, you know. We can easily be fooled by someone who sounds good and looks good at the start, but then they start to kind of shed that skin and you're like, oh, maybe this person is
not so kind nice.
Of toxic. Yeah, exactly.
All right, then. Would you like to read one more?
Yeah, this one is by Spoken Syllables. At times, I feel as though I exist underground, buried in the dirt and in the dark, lying with worms and beetles, slithering and skittering upon my skin, whispering to me, intertwining words of despair and anguish, and of hope and joy, for they do not know whether I am a corpse or a seed. That one's interesting.
That one is deep. Who wrote that one?
Spoken Syllables.
Spoken Syllable. Yeah, that, again, I'm just coming off an Edgar Allan Poe marathon, so that definitely stepping into his territory.
Yeah, I really like that one.
Yeah, especially just the beetles crawling along the skin. Yeah, if you could send that one to me, that'd be great, because honestly, this is how I find some of the guest speakers. Like, some of them I found through, you know, the Insta Poet anthology, such as yourself, and then there are others I literally just search Insta Poetry and I'm like, I like them, I want them on the podcast.
Yeah. And especially like the last line, for they do not know whether I am a corpse or a seed. So like dead or growing, you know?
Yes, which is interesting because of the four elements, water, fire, earth, air, earth is usually associated with life, such as water, and usually with death is associated with fire as like destruction. But but earth, again, by just being, we bury our dead, you know, they decompose in the earth. Like earth can in so many ways be affiliated with decay, both physical and metaphorical. Well, I wanted to thank you so much, Caitlin, for joining me today on analyzing poetry and discussing all themes of Insta-poetry with me.
No problem.
And that wraps up the very first episode of Insta-Poetic Justice, available on Apple Podcasts, and Google Play, and my website, www.paganpoetess.com. Tune in next time, and we shall tackle another Insta-poetry giant with another poet. Bye.
Bye.